people who love them.
Hello, my friends. This is Mickey Desai. I'm one of your hosts for this episode of The Thing About Cars. We have a very special guest with us today, but first I want to let Ben do that introduction. Ben, are you with us?
I am here. Our guest today is Charles Phoenix, who is an American pop culture expert, if I can use that term. My wife introduced me to his videos about neat old cars, 50s and 60s things with chromes and fins and all that good stuff, and I love them. And I thought, we need to have this guy on the show. So, Charles, welcome.
Good afternoon. How's it going, you guys? How's showbiz?
It's actually kind of cool. It's fantastic. How about you? How are things with you?
You know, it's good. Are we referring to the current world climate that we're in of craziness and uncertainty, or are we just glossing right over that? I say we gloss over it. I mean, what does it have to do with classic cars? Actually, it has a lot to do with classic cars, but that's not what we should probably be talking about classic cars. I am completely obsessed with classic cars. I have been my entire life. Classic American cars, although I'm just now able at, you know, in my late 50s, mid-50s, to admit I have a wandering eye for European sports cars my entire life, but I never tell anyone that's my own secret. But finally, I'm like just letting that cat out of the bag. But I was born on a used car lot in Ontario, California. My dad was a used car dealer. He had four used car lots on one intersection, all four corners. And so that was, you know, basically in the 60s and the early 70s. So I had a front row seat education extraordinaire. And if I wasn't down at the lots hanging out, which, you know, wasn't all the time because I had to go to school in Disneyland and shopping mall and stuff. But every night he drove home a different car. And so it would be like, first question out of our mouth is, what did you drive home? We'd all run out to the driveway to look at it. And then, I mean, every night a different car. And then it would also be, the second question was, how many cars did you sell today?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's how it all started.
What made those cars so special?
Well, you know, the American cars of the late 1950s and early 60s especially, I mean, you know, post-war American cars is my specialty. It's my study. It's my jam. It's my groove. It's my lane. You know, I'll tell you what I like about them the most is the style guide is all about optimism. And yeah. I really love it the most when they went to their pinnacle peak of wild and wackiness with the fins and the stretched out styling, rocket ship styling, comic strip styling, whimsical styling in the late 1950s. I mean, basically it was, you know, leading up all the way. 59, 60 are the pinnacle years, 61. And those, you know, I don't know, they just represent pure bliss to me and happiness and the sky's the limit. And it's the closest thing you can do to like taking a ride in a rocket ship. Most of us are never going to get to ride in a rocket ship. But when you get in one of the late 50s cars with big giant tail fins on it, I mean, it's like a cross between, well, it's like a baby, it's like a rocket ship and a car had a baby.
I think I got to agree with you. I think it's the closest thing to a sense of optimism that the auto industry has known in quite a long time. I think that's spot on description. I think that's right.
Well, to dovetail onto that, one thing I was going to ask is if you have a favorite year, and I'm kind of leading up to something with that.
Well, do I have a favorite year? You know, 58, 59, 57, 58. Well, my main study is the most outrageous years overall is 57 to me, 57 through 61. Those are the years that I really research the most. But not to say that I don't research on both sides and love tons of cars on either side of that. But really, the center of my house, the lane that I'm in, if you will, the garage that I'm in,
right,
is 57 through 61 mostly. But I love tons of the other cars on both sides. I mean, like, for a long way, back and forward and back.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool. The thing I was leading up to there was that it seems to me like 58 was kind of like a pivotal year. It was sort of when the bulbous that came before was giving way to the long and low. And of course, it was when the quad headlight started and things like that.
Well, I mean, General Motors was a little late to the game as far as dropping the cars down. I mean, that didn't happen in 59. Chrysler Corporation really were ahead of the game when they did the forward look of 1957. I mean, in 59, General Motors copied those cars, you know, considerably. And then, but, you know, I've just been getting a real big education from a friend who's super into Studebakers.
Awesome. And
which are amazing cars. And the 53 Commander Starliner Coupe really is the first four-passenger car that was dropped way down low and had a low roof. That's the car that was really kind of the spirit leader as far as four-seater cars go. I mean, that same year Corvette was introduced, but that's a two-seater car. That's a roadster. That's different. I mean, I'm talking about the big passenger, or, you know, the big four-passenger, well, in some cases, six. Well, some of the cars you could fit eight into, which we love. Anyway, yeah, I mean, so, you know, I just go crazy. I love all the details and everything, and every year there's, you know, a host of different details, whether or not the body changed overall or not, but I mean, the amount of manufacturing and quality that went in those cars, that's the other thing. The quality is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, just every detail, the design, I mean, they're so interesting. I mean, they were designed by, you know, they were drawn by hand and then sculpted. Wow. These cars are sculptures. They were sculpted out of clay. That's how they got these cars. They're sculptures. They're art.
They're art, completely. But I think what you're talking about also is that's the point where the American car manufacturers realized that a car did not have to be a truck that was just styled differently, right? They could actually make a car sit down lower, and they got away from the actual, what's the word I'm looking for, horseless carriage ethic that preceded that in the 40s, I think. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but...
I mean, you know, it's just really interesting to watch the evolution of automotive styling. I mean, literally, it does go from, you know, stagecoaches. I mean, and carriages. I mean, you know, we forget car is short for carriage.
Yeah.
Yes.
Car is short for carriage. You know, we peoples made that up. Like, our great grandparents are like, I'm not calling it a carriage anymore. I'm going to call it a car. Just drop the edge one day and then it's stuck. So you could say, I'm going to go out and get in the carriage in the driveway, and you wouldn't be incorrect. It is a carriage, but we just call it a car for sure, because we like not so many syllables. You know, it's so interesting to watch the evolution of cars from when they first got motorized and then, you know, kind of little by little by little. And, you know, Henry Ford obviously is kind of the granddaddy of really getting the whole industry rolling, assembly line wise, and getting the cars. He's responsible for getting, you know, cars to the mass market. And he did that. It changed everything. I mean, the car was the computer of its day. You know, it was the connectivity of its day, and it changed everything.
I think
so.
That's right.
Then, you know, you kind of get into the 30s. They started to get a little more streamlined because, I mean, it's the need for speed. Yeah. People want to go. I mean, it's like, you know, our egos are attached with our abilities to move quickly, like an animal. You know, and that's, you know, animal instinct. We want to move speed. So they kept like kind of trying to streamline the design so it looked like it was sweeping through the wind, you know, when it was moving, even standing still, up to the point where you get to the 1960s or the late 50s, and you've got more. Well, let me back up. So, you know, the first Cadillac Finn was styled in 48, was styled after the P-38 bomber, an airplane. And so airplanes kind of got, they began taking styling cues from airplane, and, you know, like the bullet nose Studebaker. I mean, it's basically a propeller without the propeller, you know, a propeller place without the propeller. So the airplane started being an influence in the styling because it represented speed. And then by the time they got done with really using that as a motif, you know, we got to the 59 Cadillac or the 59 Dodge or the 59 Buick or any of those 59s. And you see, basically, they're rocket ships.
Yeah.
So I love the whimsical, innocent, kind of optimistic quality the styling has. And plus, not only that, we haven't even mentioned, back then, I mean, these cars were available in like a rainbow of colors in, you know, pastels, mediums, and darks, opaque and metallics, and tritones, two-tones, then matching interiors, these rich, beautiful brocade cloths that I call like party cloth. I mean, the cloth that they put in these cars, the leather, the vinyl, I mean, bright colors, turquoise and pinks and purples and oranges and reds and, I mean, yellow and black. And I mean, all these crazy combinations. I mean, it was like, it literally got to be comic strip level of pop color, pop culture.
I think to a certain extent, there's a degree of that we could get back without blowing it, but nobody's figured out how to do that yet.
I think we're stuck in an age where car production sort of limits, we limit ourselves because of the numbers.
Yeah, with economies of scale, it becomes to the point where everything is such a risk, you just don't go there, and now we have these bland-mobiles.
I think that's right. It's bland-mobiles is a really good term
right. for it. Yeah, I mean, what we really have now, I mean, what our cars really are, they've really become, appliances that are, at their core, they are roll cages on wheels. That's what they are.
So
I mean, safety became the driving force, if pardon the pun. So we have roll cages on wheels. That's what we're driving now. They're roll cages.
That's exactly right.
We could say, why don't we take a ride in the roll cage? Let's take a ride in the roll cage.
Really. Tell us about your new fondness for European sports cars. Are we talking about modern ones or of the same era, or what drives your fancy there?
No, vintage. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't. I mean, there's not that much to tell other than I'm like everyone else. If I see like an old Porsche or a Ferrari or a Maserati or a Alfa Romeo or, virtually that genre, I'm like, it's like, look at that.
You know,
for a second, a BMW, I love all those, but it's a little uncomfortable for me to admit it. I mean, especially since I'm like completely obsessed with, American pop culture, mid-century American pop culture. In fact, I say I'm addicted to it. I have a couple books, by the way, Addicted to Americana. And that is a really fun book. It has over 500 images. And it just covers, all kinds of stuff. I've been collecting other people's old slides for about 30 years. Old Kodachrome slides. Remember slides?
Oh, yes.
So you'd have a slideshow in your den. So I have a massive collection, and from that, I also do live performance. I mean, my main stock and trade in this world is live performance, and I do these retro slideshows. I've been doing them for, 22-23 years now. So yeah, that's my real deal, but I'm obsessed with Americana. Mid-century is my muse. I can talk to you about everything, fashion, architecture, cars, design, style of any kind. But back to the cars, I'm really... I like to go fast like everybody does, but I'm more of a style guide than a speed guy. To me, it's not about how many horses are under the hood. I mean, even though, of course I like to floor it, go 100 miles an hour. Who doesn't? But that's not my priority. I'm a style guy more than a speed guy.
Well, that's right. And there's nothing that says you can't really have both.
They go well together.
Your style and speed.
And exactly. Plenty of cars do go fast. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask, how did you become the ambassador of Americana? And I think you've already touched on that. You've been collecting slides and you've been, showing us these glimpses of the American landscape for quite some time now. And I was wondering, how did you land on that? And how did you earn the title ambassador of Americana?
I gave it to myself. Somebody has to be the ambassador of Americana. So I just say it one day. I said, hi, I'm your ambassador of Americana, and it kind of stuck. Now what I'm doing is I have a series on Facebook called Joyride, and Charles Phoenix Joyride. And it is basically me going out and finding cars, like, wherever I can, vintage cars of the mid-century era. And I give you all the details and we tour the car. I like low mileage, original, unrestored cars. That's my number one favorite. But, sometimes these cars are restored beautifully. But I'm also, I like cars as they rolled off the assembly line. I'm a purist in that way.
So you're not into modifications. You don't want the, you want the pure thing that showed up in the showroom.
Well, for me, yes. That's what I'm seeking. And that's what I study the most. Not to say that I don't appreciate the cultures of, hot rod culture and custom car culture and low rider culture, those various genres. I do. I enjoy seeing what people come up with, the creativity, where they take these cars, what they do with the cars, and, all of that stuff, rat rods and all that. I do enjoy that. I'm a car guy. What can I say? I mean, I, I, I sit on this, I could sit on the corner and just watch the cars go by all day and just like, oh, look at that one, wah, 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 yeah. Whatever. But, for me, my main study, and I collect cars too. I've owned a couple hundred cars. I'm also a car collector. But I go for what I've always gone for, what I've always strived to collect are low mileage, unrestored originals. And by that, I mean original interior, original paint, original everything. Now, I don't always get them that way, but I like them stock. I like them honest. I like them real. I like my cars with a story. Usually I'm buying, oftentimes I'm buying a story and a car goes with it. That's kind of the way I also like to roll. So the last car that I bought, I don't buy that many cars, but I bought a 58 DeSoto Fireflight two-door hardtop, and the color is French turquoise. It's French turquoise, which is a metallic, kind of a greenish turquoise. Has a big white sweeping side spray. You got to look it up. 58 DeSoto Fireflight. They're shocking. And it has triple tower taillights. This is one of the most outrageous, most beautiful designs of the 1950s. And this car is rock solid, and it just solid to drive. It's smooth and powerful and fun. Anyway, it has also the matching turquoise, tritone turquoise interior. It just everything. It's like fashion mobile. It's like a rocket ship. It's like when you drive this car, I was thinking about it last night. I'm like, you don't just drive this car. This is an event everywhere it goes. It just is. Not because it's my car, but anybody could be driving it and it's an event. But I also have a 59 Plymouth Sport Fury and a couple other cars. And I love, seeing other people's collections and, seeking out other cars. That's kind of one of the things that drives me to, get out and go places, to see other people's, amazing cars and find out the stories that go along with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's why Ben and I started this thing is just the love of seeing what other people are doing in their cars. And, it's not just the car. The car is nothing without the person, and we want to know about them as well. So
that's something.
I like to know. I like the story of the cars, and I also like to play detective to find a car. I have to tell you a funny story. Do you have time for a funny story?
Sure.
So 58 Oldsmobile 98 is one of the most outrageous, over-the-top, over-trimmed, rocket ship-styled cars ever of all time. A big luxury liner. 58 Oldsmobile 98. Look it up. Anyway, so I was at the big car show here in Southern California. It's like 30 years ago. And somebody walks up to me and says, I know you like those big 50s cars. Well, I know where there's one. I know where there's a 58 Oldsmobile 98 two-door hardtop, original owner, low mileage original, in a garage in the city of Arcadia, which is a medium-sized town in suburbia here in Los Angeles. And so the guy said, I don't know where they live, but I know the husband is a house painter. So you better get that car before the mailman does, because the mailman wants that car. So I'm like, what? I got to find this car. So I called up every painter in that particular region of Southern California, every house painting company. Is there anybody there who has a 58 Oldsmobile 98 in a garage? No. Click, click, click. So finally, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go door to door. And I'm going to just start knocking on doors. So one Saturday morning, about 9:30, I started out in this town, which is a nice town. And I like, knock, 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 ding, dong. Do you have a 58 Oldsmobile? First of all, I say I'm trying to play detective to find. I'm trying to play detective, takes the heat off of who are you and what are you? It's like, they know immediately. I'm a person trying to play detective. So that kind of washes away a lot of fears, and people start talking to you. But anyway, I went to about 13 houses, and finally after about 13 houses, I'm like, you know what? This isn't going to work. Forget about it. So then cut to literally 25 years later, I never go to car shows, believe it or not, hardly at all, but once in a while, but I don't go to that many car shows. So I like to seek individual cars rather than whole groups of them. But anyway, so I go to this car show on the other side of the metropolis here in Los Angeles, and there's this 58 Oldsmobile 98. And I walk up to it, and I said, is this car from Arcadia? And he goes, yeah. How'd you know? I said, are you the postman? He goes, yeah. I was a postman. I said, you got the car. So anyway, I ended up finding the car. That's the whole story. I don't have the car yet. He won't sell it to me. But, I track cars down. I will track cars down. And here's the deal. What I say to people, I never say, will you sell me that car?
Right.
I never say that. What I say is when and if the car becomes available. Because if, these people that have had these cars for years it's not easy for them to part with them. And chances are they're not going to part with them anytime soon. So I have the patience of a saint. I have a car right now that I can't even talk about because I don't want to jinx it. I've been waiting 30 years.
No kidding.
For the family to sell it to me. 30 years. 30 years. So, yeah, I will wait, but never ask, never say, will you sell me the car? No, it's when and if the car ever becomes available. Because you don't otherwise know. They'll put a big no across your face, but you want them to put a, you know, okay, perhaps. Well, there's what? 9 times out of 10, I always wind up car.
I'm watching the show every once in a while. I can't remember if it's History Channel or Motor Trend, but the guy, it's called Counting Cars, and he'll just go driveway to driveway and ask people to tell them about their cars. And at the end of that, he'll say, well, how much would it take? Or, you know, how much would you let it go for? And that's the way he, you know, starts to broker that conversation.
Sometimes you wind up overpaying for a car. You know, sometimes you get super bargains and sometimes you end up paying the price or whatever, but it all evens out in the wash.
It all evens out. That's right.
You know, it's exactly.
So do you still are you still on the road with your slideshows?
Well, right now, because of the current situation in this whole world of ours, you know, virtually every single show has been canceled and nothing's been booked for the future. So I may need a new career. But you know, whatever. I'm adaptive. I'll figure it out. I'm not worried.
Whenever it gets to where you can start doing the show again, please come to Atlanta. We would love to see you.
I would love to go to Atlanta. It's been a while since I've been to Atlanta, but the last time I was in Atlanta, I went to see the Microcar collection, which was the bubble gum, a bubble gum fortune. But it's all, you know, it all got sold off. It's no longer intact. And then there was also a guy about an hour away, I forgot what city it was, that maybe Athens, I'm not sure, who restored nothing but late 50s and early 60s Ford Country Squire station wagons, the one that had the fake wood trim on them. Yep. I mean, he was one of those restorers that I really admire who can take a car and literally make it new, like it rolled off the assembly line. I mean, that is an art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll have to look him up and see if he's still in business. So, which sort of begs the question, what's your daily driver?
My daily driver out in the real world is a Dodge Challenger in orange.
No kidding.
I've actually had three of them. I mean, you know, they've been out since 2008. So I'm on my third one. And you know what? I've never had a hiccup on all three of them. Not one hiccup.
My wife will be pleased to hear that. She's got a 2018 Challenger, and she loves it.
Yeah, they're great cars. That's a great car. Unfortunately, I just backed into somebody the other day.
Oh, no.
I was trying to avoid a beautiful post. I was backing out of someone's driveway, trying to avoid hitting their post box, or whatever you call it, their mailbox, and smashed into another Challenger.
Oh, no.
And so I put a big dent in it the size of a big ham steak.
Man. Oh, no. Bummer. It happens. I've only got a handful of questions for you left, a couple small things here and there. Given that you choose to drive a modern Mopar, and given that we've sort of touched on the notion that newer cars are all built around the idea of being safer, airbags and seatbelts and whatnot, what vintage car do you wish they'd remake with those modern upgrades?
None. Absolutely not. You can't bring it back. You can't redo it and reinterpret it. I mean, so the answer to that is none. I mean, I guess as close as we've gotten to it is like the Thunderbird that they brought back about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I think those are pretty cool cars. The Volkswagen Bug came back. They did the modern version of that. But, you know, they're not going to bring any more back. Those days are done, it seems to me. I mean, the way that the, you know, automotive industry has gone, I mean, they've just tried to streamline their operation for just functionality. I mean, style is virtually 99% of the style of the car is virtually based on functionality and not, you know what I'm trying to say. They're just trying to crank the cars out and make the most they can. And, you know, and plus, you know, I guess people aren't buying as many cars as they used to. So nothing in this world ever stays the same. Everything changes all the time, as we know. And, you know, that's the way it is. So, yeah, I'm not fantasizing about them coming out with some whatever kind of car.
That's cool. If the thing about cars threw an early fall picnic-themed potluck party, what would you drive to the event and what would you serve?
Wait, what's the question? If what?
If we threw an early fall picnic-themed potluck party, what would you drive to the potluck party, and what food would you serve?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. I mean, I would like to drive to a picnic party. Of course, I would like to drive a 1960 Ford Country Squire station wagon, which is the one with the fake wood trim on it. 1960 Ford. It's a one-year-only station wagon design. And the most unusual feature of it, if someone's looking it up right now as they're listening, is the big bubular rear window. That was a one-year only. Anyway, I would like that, and I would like to I'd like to arrive in that, and I would like to serve food that I cooked on the way under the hood. That's called a barbecue. When you drive, like I did this one time only. Driving from, where was I driving from? I guess Kingman, Arizona to Holbrook, where the Wigwam Village Motel is on Route 66. Roasted a pork tenderloin, and I made potatoes, and I cut up apples with cinnamon and sugar and butter. Triple foil, triple heavy-duty foil everything. So I cut up the apples, put some butter, put some cinnamon, put some sugar, wrapped it up, triple wrap, as I said, heavy-duty aluminum foil, and I stuck it into the engine compartment. The potatoes, you kind of have to chop them up really fine and put some butter and salt and pepper in there and wrap them up, put them in there. And then the roast pork tenderloin, put a lot of rub on it, wrap, triple wrap it, and stick it on where you think is the hottest spot. And then, you know, just drive for about 2 hours, maybe 2.5. And when you get there, open the hood and start unwrapping. And I guarantee you, you're going to be the belle of the picnic party ball.
That's fantastic.
Now I have heard of this.
Yeah. Now I really can't wait for you to
come back. That's a barbecue. That's a barbecue.
That's a barbecue.
I would love to.
Ben, we are running out of time. Do you got one? You want to get one more in before we sign off?
What bugs you on the road? What do other drivers do that just makes you want to scream and pull your hair out?
Well, you know, I tell you, I've grown older, I don't let road rage, I rarely let it get to me. You know, once in a while, you know, I'll have to say something like, "You stupid F," you know, something like that. But I don't let road rage get to me. I mean, I'm sure this is a G-rated show. You know what word I'm saying.
Yeah.
We keep it G-rated, right? Yeah, why not? So, you know, but I, you know, I live in LA. Traffic here, we're like, you know, here's the thing. I mean, I get a little bit like, why is LA like the scapegoat or the place that everyone says the traffic is so bad? I've been to Atlanta. I've been to Portland. I've been to Austin. I've been all these places. I've been to Bombay. Traffic sucks everywhere, not just LA. Right? In Atlanta, it sucks, right?
Oh, my God.
You know, all we can do, just, you know, it is what it is. I'm really good at maneuvering around my town. You know, I know every bottleneck there is, and I know how to avoid them at whatever time of the day. I am really good with time and space, so I know exactly, no matter what time of day it is, how long it's virtually going to take me to get anywhere. And, you know, I kind of avoid the thickest part of town at the wrong time, and I just crank up the music. You know, I crank up my vintage George Jones or Tammy Wynette or Marty Robbins or England Dan and John Ford Coley or the Carpenters or whatever I feel like listening to, and I just sing along at the top of my lungs, and you know, like I just get there and I'm in a good mood. I try not to let the other people, you know, I don't take it personally. They don't know who I am. They're not cutting me off. They're just cutting somebody off. They don't know it's me. So I don't take it personally.
Right.
So I have the chill pill going on the whole time.
I think that's
and it works.
Exactly. I think that's the best and the right way to do it.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And I love driving. I love driving cars. You know, we didn't get to the part about driving the cars.
Right.
We talked about how much we love the way they look and the way the styling and all the colors and, you know, how fun they are. But the best thing of all is, besides like finding a garage find and like detailing it and bringing out, you know, cleaning it and really making it look fantastic for the first many years, driving these cars is the biggest thrill. Just being behind that wheel and and pushing that gas pedal and turning around the corner. And, you know, we've arrived. You know, here we are. Driving the cars is the ultimate payoff. That's the real there. You can sit and stare at them all day long. Ha, ha, ha. Fun. Love it. But when you get behind that wheel, you are like, you're in a time machine, and you can just take that magic carpet ride wherever you want to go.
Absolutely.
That's what I do.
Well, you're changing my mind. I used to think I wanted to get more into American Muscle from the 70s, and I'm going to have to look closer to the mid-50s and see if I can get behind the wheel of some of those at some point.
Yeah, I mean, they drive great. I mean, they're powerful cars, very powerful cars. I mean, they're practically muscle cars. They just didn't call them that yet. I mean, not all of them, but a lot of them. Try Chrysler 300 or a DeSoto Adventurer. There are so many. So anyway, you were going to say something and I interrupted.
Oh, not at all. I think, you know, we've got about 3 minutes left. It might be a good time to just leisurely round out the show. And let me say to you, thank you for joining us for this episode of The Thing About Cars. I really do hope you get to visit Atlanta at some point again.
Fantastic. In the meantime, check out Charles Phoenix Joyride on my Facebook page, which is Charles Phoenix. Go on to my website, charlesphoenix.com. And if you love what I do, check out my books, Addicted to Americana and Holiday Jubilee, two picture books that are full of all kinds of fun stuff, all the pop culture of all the stuff we love. So cars, everything, the holiday book, holiday, everything, love it.
I'm going to do that right
now. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, my pleasure.
To our listener, thanks for joining us for this episode of The Thing About Cars. You can find us via our website, thingaboutcars.com, or on Facebook. Just search for The Thing About Cars there, and we look forward to your comments and feedback as always. In the meantime, we hope you're all staying safe and that you're having a good day. Take care.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.